Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's
Each week, they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff, too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Anyway, okay, off we go. Another really... a rehearsed introduction, Russ. You know, we pour over this stuff, you know, for hours and hours. This, of course, is another episode of The Suspendables. That great laugh you're hearing, we're going to introduce in a second. We go back, Rusty. You go back. One of my favorite guys. We probably met years and years ago doing events, and he's always been a guy who showed up at all these events when other guys wouldn't, and. One of my favorite guys, one of the nicest guys in the world. And the best thing he ever did, Russ, for me, we were doing an event in Calgary. I think it was that golf tournament where Gretz and Mike Weir played.
Yeah.
And we were doing a dinner, and I was annihilated out of my mind. Back in my blurry days. And I don't know, I was sitting there with Gretz, and we were doing an auction. I think a Bearcat was up there doing it. It was going a little bit flat, and I was about, I don't know, 25 scotches deep, and Gretz gave me the thing, goes, go up there, Jimmy, and do it, and I was just out of my mind, and Kelly said, patted me on the back and said, good job, Jim, just give me the microphone.
Give me your key.
We're talking about the one and only Kelly Rudy. How are you, Kelly?
Jim and Russ, I'm doing great. I remember that night, Jim, and you know, you did auction off one item, and I can't remember what it was now, but I just thought I got to save my friend here because you're just having a little bit too much fun.
Yeah, I'll tell you what though, what you were though after that is there was, you know, the production guy was there, Donnie Metz, and yep. And other guys were there, and everyone came up to me and looked out of the side of their mouth and go, what are you doing? And you came up and gave me a bear hug and went, fantastic, kid, fantastic. Yeah. This guy's had your back. Anyway, thanks a million, Kelly, for joining us, and we really appreciated it. You've been, like I said, you were on a list. But you're about 80th on the list, so we've gone through a bunch of guys.
I didn't realize I'd be that high.
Yeah. Congratulations, man, on everything you've done and your hockey career. But I was trying to think today and your broadcasting career, tough gig to keep, you know, in the day and age when it's a revolving door, you know, and particularly on the panel, analyzing hockey games. I don't know, about every 15 minutes, they bring a new guy in all the time. But
yeah,
how long have you been doing it now, Kelly?
Jim and Russ, I believe this is my 23rd year full time on Hockey Night, which is quite a run. I never expected it. You know, I thank my lucky stars and my good fortune for still being around, and I still enjoy it. Maybe that's I hope that's evident by my the way I broadcast, because I still really enjoy this gig and different ways to talk about hockey, because as you guys know, I mean, the game has changed so much in the last, say, 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to stay on top of it. So, and I enjoy the work. I'm lucky.
Well, I was going to guess 20 years, that you've been doing it. And, we've really enjoyed, watching you, listening to you, and, behind the mask. How long was that? Is that still?
Holy.
Is that
that's
still?
That's not around. No, it's not around, is it? Russ, but that segment was super fun, and especially I think for Western Canadians, they sort of, you know, felt that was their own too, right? Because it was all Western Canadian games, mainly the majority, all from Edmonton, Calgary, and Vancouver, and a few of the like Denver and LA would do some. But that was, and we really talked, we really dug into what the Western Canadian teams were doing. And it wasn't so much Eastern Canada. And so that had a really nice following, and I really enjoyed it. And And then after that, I moved on to Toronto full time. And that's been, gosh, I don't even know how many years now. It's got to be 10 or 12 years. I've been going every weekend almost to Toronto.
So you commute, you fly out there and fly back home, Calgary to
Toronto? I do. Yeah. I do.
A lot of air miles.
A lot of air miles, my friend. So you got to find a silver lining, right?
Yeah. People don't realize, Kelly, that you're 88 years old, you know, but you look really good. You know?
I feel it. I know I'm only 61, but I feel 88 sometimes.
Well, I know Kelly's 4 years older than me because the first time I met you, Kelly, was at Medicine Hat training camp. Sure. And you were 20 and I was 16. And I think we were in Sherwood Park.
That's right.
And I'll just never forget because you were drafted and you were getting ready to go to New York's training camp. And there were some other great players there, Murray Craven and a few others. But I'll tell this quick story. So
that'd be a first.
That was back when we did 2-a-days.
Sure.
And the second game was always brutal. But you were in another group, and some tough guy ripped a shot past your ears, and you were pissed off.
Yeah.
So Patty Janelle was the coach and owner, and his son Danny and I were good friends. And he comes to me after lunch. And he goes, "You got to watch the second game of your." So we are up in the stands, and there's Kelly dressed as a left winger.
That's right.
Starting line. Come on. Drops the gloves with this guy, and what a fight! And he beat the living shit out of this guy.
Well, I don't know about that part, Russ.
Oh, yeah, you did.
The story's completely accurate. So I know. I even remember the guy because he made our team, Bruce Gordon,
from Flin Flon, right?
Well, he was from Saskatoon, but we did have a few guys from Flin Flon. You're right about that. But Bruce Gordon, he went on to play a couple of years with us, and he was tough as nails. So I don't know if I got the upper hand. I doubt it. But we stayed in contact, and he went on to have an amazing career at the Saskatoon Police Service. Now, unfortunately, he passed away a couple of summers ago. But just a wonderful guy, and, you know, I cherish my memories with him. Maybe not that particular memory, Russ, but, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was awesome, to see a goalie, in gear, you know, playing forward, and what happened. I mean, it was just like, that was the best payback. It was great. And it was a great fight. I mean, I remember it.
I got into a few dusters back in the day in the Western Hockey League. I remember my first fight, 17-year-olds, and we're playing the Calgary Wranglers. And I'd have to look at the roster now to remember the guy's name, but he was a big, tall defenseman. And we're fighting near their bench. This is in Medicine Hat. And the linesmen come in and they're like, "Okay, break it up." And since it was my first fight in junior, I thought, "Oh, okay, so you just stop fighting." So I let go and he walled me a good one right in my right eye. And I had a shiner for about 2 weeks. And that was lesson number one learned about fighting, that, you know, once a linesman comes in and says, "Okay, let go," you don't let go until you're secure. So.
I didn't know you were a fighter.
Either did those guys.
Oh, well, you know that league, Russ, right? You played there a long time, and it was, I'm happy to say it's not like that anymore, but that back then, that's what it was. And it was all about intimidation and bullying and all that kind of stuff. And I'm glad to say that doesn't exist any longer.
Well, right. I was lucky my first year, Jeff, my brother, was my left winger. So anybody who looked at me the wrong way, beat the shit out of him. He was 20 and tough. And then the next year he was in Hershey and I was like, "Oh my God." So I had to learn a few tricks. One was how to hang on, but I did, you do learn whether you're a fighter or not, you have to learn how to take care of yourself because eventually you're going to be in a 5-on-5 brawl and you're going to have to fight. So everybody on the team had to take a lesson and learn that the fighters would teach the non-fighters, or we had a guy who was a boxing trainer that would come in the locker room and show us all these tricks. And anyways, it was, the Western Hockey League back then was fun and freaking scary at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. But the good news was you didn't necessarily have to win your fight, right? It's just as long as you're in the battle.
Exactly.
And then your teammates had your back, right? Like, yeah. I've lost count of how many times, not only in junior, but in the National Hockey League, we'd come back into the dressing room at the end of a period, and one of my teammates just lost a fight badly. And we'd be like, great job, way to go. And, you know, that's the first thing you talk about, not about somebody's great goal. It'd be about how the guy stood up to the guy on the other team. It's a different environment, but kind of cool.
Yeah.
Go back, Kelly, to, 23 years broadcasting. You're the same age as me. You're 61.
Yeah.
I heard a great expression the other day, and I thought of you when I saw your a few games ago on the panel. And one of them was, someone asked a guy, what's life all about? And the guy said, in the end, what life's all about is how we influence other people to reach a greater potential. And there was this beautiful segment, that was it Patrick Marleau who just retired?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And they had him behind the mic, you see these things when they retire. And he went on at length, Kelly, about the influence that you had on him. And I'm sure it must have been an emotional moment for I was tearing up. I was like,
yeah,
well, and knowing you, what a very, very cool moment that guy did.
That was Jim. And so for the story that people don't know, my last year in the National Hockey League was Patty's first year. And I watched him in training camp, and I thought there were similarities between he and I at that young age. And so I was very shy, and Patrick was shy. And I thought, well, he was 17, I think, just turning 18. And I thought, well, the likelihood, he's not going to live by himself, right? The team wouldn't allow that. So he'd probably be with a billet family like he was in Seattle where he played junior. And I thought, well, this might be a great opportunity for Patty to come live with Donna and I and the three girls. And it might be really great for me to sort of rejuvenate me and, remember the excitement about playing, because I knew I was winding down and Patty was super excited. And so we took Patty out for dinner on a Sunday. And if you've ever been to the States, there's this really great chain called the Chart House. And it was by where we lived in San Jose. And that was just like if the girls liked Patty and Patty liked our family, then maybe we'd have a chat to see if he'd like to live with us. And it all went great. And so he lived with us that year. But much to my surprise, Jim, I didn't know Patty was going to go on at length about his experience living with us. But what I remember most, and this is cool, Jim and Russ, at the end of every game at home, we'd go back and Donna would make sandwiches and we'd have a couple drinks and we'd just visit. We'd stay up till like 3 a.m, the three of us, and just chat about life and about family and how Patty grew up in Aneroid, Saskatchewan, and just really, really cool. I didn't know that there were some lessons in there that he learned from my experience in the game, but it was just awesome. And we stay in touch. I love the kid. So, well, I guess I shouldn't say he's a kid. He's 40 some years old now, but I still think of him as 18-year-old Patty Marleau at our house.
That's so great. That's incredible. The influence that older players, good or bad, have on young players. And it's so nice to hear. And I'm sure, Kelly, along your way, you saw some assholes that could have been, and then so many great guys, because there are more, they outweigh the good guys, outweigh the bad guys, but you can see how older players influence the young players, and great work that you did that. And you didn't really even mean to do it, but you're just being you, Kelly, which I know you well. You're a great guy and your wife's awesome. And the influence obviously you had on was fantastic. So good on you.
Well, I was, I think a lot of us learn a lot of lessons, as you said, Russ, from the people we're around. When I was in New York, my first team in the NHL, I was surrounded by greatness, not only, I mean, on the ice greatness, but in the room. And so there are a lot of good people to follow. And I still think so highly of those guys. And we've just recently lost a couple of them, or in fact, we've lost four teammates in the last 4 months. And so it's been a really tough go, the fondest of memories of all those guys.
Kelly, anyone in Canada, right, is into hockey, right? And all their kids play hockey. Right?
There you go.
Shocker.
See well the done. Shit
well,
I bring-
well done, Jim.
See the shit I bring to the show, Kelly? You know what? We should just sign off right now. What a gem. What a gem I just dropped on everyone.
I can see this being around for 23 years.
One of the things is a lot of parents, they're going, I hope my kid doesn't want to be a goaltender, because the toughest thing growing up being a goaltender is the mental side of the, you know, letting goals in and saving. Sure. It's just like, I hear that a lot. You obviously, another gem I'm going to drop here. You were a goaltender in the NHL. Okay. Yeah, just in case people, what? was it always going to be goaltending for you, or walk us through that when you were a kid till your days in the NHL?
Okay, so it's a little different story how I got into playing goal. So I was, when I was 11 years old, I went to my mom and dad and I said, I'd like to join organized hockey, because I'd never played on a team before. And my mom and dad, even though they weren't from a sports family, and they said, well, you can't, you have to learn how to skate for a year. And that was the best advice ever given to me, right? So I didn't realize at that point the importance of skating, and in particular for a goaltender and knowing your edges and so on. And so I just went to the community rink every day after school. Perhaps I did my homework, perhaps not. maybe I was a little negligent in that department, but anyways. And so the next year I joined organized hockey, but I didn't know what position I wanted to play. And a few weeks before I was going to have my first tryout, I was playing ball hockey at my buddy's Jeff Marshall's house. And his dad was just walking past the driveway, and he overheard a conversation that Jeff and I were having about what position I might want to play. And Jeff's dad heard it, and he sort of interrupts and says something like, Kelly, I don't want to influence you too much, but whenever I watch all the neighborhood kids like you guys play ball hockey, when you're in the net, you stop the ball more than anybody else. So that was it. That was my thought. Okay, maybe I'll try goal. And then I just love the challenge. And as you can expect, starting at 12, I wasn't very good. And I would get cut every year, like 2-3 times, till I was slotted to find the proper team at my level. But I just persevered. And then finally, when I was 17, that's the first year ever, you guys, that I wasn't cut. I went to the Medicine-Hat Tigers, and I made them 2 days in training camp and played 3 years there, then a couple in the minors. And yeah, right. It's a unique story, but and somehow I found the, you know, the mental strength, I guess, to persevere through tough times, because it is a hard job, right?
Wow. That's incredible. That's kind of similar to my brother Jeff's story growing up, always getting cut, especially the first year of each year he'd play on the B team.
Okay.
And
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then he quit hockey in junior B. Because the rinks went on strike in Victoria anyways, went out to Alberta, started working, and then came back at 18 and started playing again. But
wow, what a story.
Where I was going to go with this was Curtis Joseph. He played like B hockey.
That's right.
And Johnny Bauer saw him play, and he was getting pummeled like 70 shots a game and only letting in like 3 or 4 goals.
Right. Yeah.
And Johnny Bauer called Notre Dame and said, you guys should get this goalie. And he came to Notre Dame, and the rest is history. I don't know if I know Johnny Bauer called Notre Dame, and I know he played at Notre Dame, but he was such a good goalie because he was in this little town in BC, I think in BC, and he was just getting shell shocked.
Yep.
But he got better. And I coached my son growing up, and I would always tell these parents of goalies. Yep. So I don't know much about the position, never played it.
Yeah.
But you don't want to put your kid on the best team and get no shots. He's only going to get shots in practice.
It.
You want to be on the worst team getting all the shots.
That's entirely accurate, Russ. So my first year, if you were to look me up on Hockey DB, you'd see that my first year in Medicine Hat, my goals against average was 6.17. and now I always joke with kids, if I made the National Hockey League, you can too. I mean, I give my stat, but the other part of the story I don't tell, because it's kind of like the it puts it in proper perspective, is that I was also named the Rookie of the Year on the team and the MVP. So when you look at the number of shots I would have every game, Russ, it was crazy. We went to Portland. You guys remember how great Portland and US and those teams were back then, right? And we went to Portland, and I think we lost 14-1 or 16-2 or something. And I was named one of the stars of the game. Can you imagine? I had 100 and some shots. I gave up 14 or 16 goals, and I was named one of the stars. But because of that year, you know, getting, as you mentioned, Russ, getting pelted with shot after shot every single game, it was either going to ruin me or help me. And it made me, really. That's the truth of it.
That's awesome. What a great story.
A hell of a story. Yeah.
Kelly, when I first met you, you're 20, right? You were freaking unbelievable. And I would never, ever guess that. Like, I would have thought, you know, you grew up a star player and, you know, whatever. I would have never bet on that story to be accurate.
Oh, no. I was the farthest thing from a star.
Well, that's a great story. And it's a really good story for kids out there, you know. Hearing that from you, it is because they all think, you know, if they're not the superstar on the team, they're not going to make it. And it's not true. And players like yourself and my brother that he was never drafted and came up through the tough route, I would say. Anyways, it's
definitely,
it's encouraging for people to keep going.
And that's why I always bring up, like, currently I talk a lot about Andrew Mangiapane, the plays for the Calgary Flames. Yep. And here's a guy that he's undersized by today's standard for sure in National Hockey League, but he never gets discouraged, right? He just, that engine of his just continues to work and work and work. And I always say to young boys and young girls out there, if you're what you would think a disadvantage by your size, it doesn't matter. If you've got the will and the determination, you can have all the success that you want.
Yeah. There's no doubt, Kelly, that because that brings me to my next question about what you would say to someone who wants to be a goalie. There's no doubt in my mind that the goaltender has to have the toughest skin of all players on any team. And I wonder if some kid stepped up and said, hey, we're getting old enough that some kid might call you Mr. now, Kelly. OK, and say, Mr. Rudy, what do I have to expect being a goaltender? What would you tell them?
Yeah, boy. Well, it's so much different now because of social media and the way that people, whether it's bullying or the hate. And so, you know, it's different. And I wouldn't understand that, experiencing it as a National Hockey League goalie, what they go through. But just in terms of the young kid, I think the best advice I can give you in terms of dealing with it mentally is that you have to have a really short memory. And I know this is going to sound really simple and kind of silly, but if you've never played the position, the number one thought I had after I gave up a goal was just make the next save. I didn't think about making the next 10 in a row or getting through the period. In fact, I broke every period down into 5-minute segments because I convinced myself I could be perfect for 5 minutes at a time. I couldn't convince myself that I could be perfect for an entire game. So I didn't try. I just 5 minutes and make the next save as soon as a goal, you give up. And it's a very simple philosophy, but I think it works because otherwise, you know, all of us, whether you're playing goal or what we're doing in life, you have to have manageable goals, right? And you have to have some success. You have to get some wins every once in a while. And I think just making your life goals manageable really helps in that area.
Or be a complete fucking whack job.
Well, that's that, Russ.
don't touch the goalie. Don't touch the goalie. What were you like in the dressing room? Did guys come around you during the games, or did you?
I was like I am now. I'm pretty mild mannered. Maybe a tiny bit quieter game day in the afternoon, but you could joke with me. And I remember Grant Thier and I played on LA Kings for about half a year together. And I think it was Sean O'Donnell said, I don't know if in the history of the National Hockey League, there have been two more relaxed goalies on the same team. Now, you know, I think beneath the surface, both Grant and I, you know, had our own little battles with, you know, the pressure and so on. But I think on the surface, we made it look as though we were pretty casual.
Yeah, cool. Anyway, this friend of mine, his name's Matt DeCore, and he was working out with you one time. And I was just knocked out because skaters, you know, they play games, they go to practice, and then they go home or they go to lunch. But he was telling me that you maybe said to him that goalies have to stretch 2 or 3 hours a day, every day.
Yeah, it's it depends. You know, you have to feel your body, but I would stretch on game day 8 to 10 times every single game day. And I had to do it. For me, it was very important to remain flexible. So I didn't leave a game because of an injury that I could have prevented. And so for me, that was extremely important. Even the off days, I would stretch maybe not 2 or 3 hours, but definitely an hour at least. I like to sort of help me a little bit. I'd take a warm bath, and I did all these things to prepare my body to make sure that when I was going out there, I gave myself the best chance for success.
Kelly, that's interesting, because when you and I played together, when you were stretching, I thought you were just calling the waiter over for another beer.
That's when I'd raise my arm really high in the air and say, another one, please.
Yeah.
Back in those days, right? Holy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a stretch.
It was for 2 or 3 hours. We'd go out and stretch.
Oh my God. Back in the day, right?
Holy. Oh my God.
You must have some great memories.
Well, you know, Russ, when he starts talking about the junior hockey memories, they're just incredible. And the friendships that you still have, right, with the guys. And yeah, I run into them every once in a while. And you start telling stories just like, Russ and I, Jim, and it just brings back the fondest of memories. And I'm sitting on a park bench in the River Valley here in Edmonton. I've got a big smile on my face, and it's just a great way to spend an afternoon.
Throw your hat down. You might get some coins.
Well, like, there's that too. I have grandchildren I'm gonna have to put through school. So, you know, yeah, maybe.
In my old days, man, I'd whip down there with a little Mickey or rum, and we could shoot the shit for a while down there. Let's talk about the broadcasting career. You know, that you've been in 23 years, which is unbelievable. Was it all what was going to happen to you, Kelly? Talk about Russ. Russ has a great story. When I said, when did you decide to retire? And he said, I didn't. Yeah. I got retired.
Okay.
How about that day for you, Kelly, when, you know, you had such a long career, L.A., Calgary, the island, or the Isle, and then that day has to come where you got to start to dip your toe in the retirement water.
Okay, so mine's a little different, I think, than most guys. So when I was playing in New York, and there, as I said before, I was really shy, but that sort of brought out the personality in me. And so whenever... Because in New York, you get interviewed tons and tons and tons, right? So that really helped me. And all of a sudden, I started thinking, you know what? This might be something I might want to do. I might want to be a broadcaster. So I was one of those guys that I love watching hockey games. And I bring that up for a reason, because not every player does watch games on off days. But I did. And not only did I watch the games, but I watched the broadcasts. And so I started thinking, hey, this might be cool. And then I started to get some opportunities when I was in LA to go to Toronto and start working on Hockey Night when my team either didn't make the playoffs or lost in the first round. And so now fast forward to my last year, entering my last year in San Jose, it was 97-98. And my feelings toward the game started to change, and it became harder to play. Practice became harder. Like, practice should not be hard mentally, right? Like, you should be able to keep up with the pace and everything. And I thought it was becoming harder. And so I remember telling my lawyer that I think this is my last year. And he was kind of like, well, no, I think you can still play another year or two. And I go, Lloyd, I'm going to put it in proper perspective for you. I said, the wins aren't as special anymore, and the losses don't hurt as much. And for me, that's when I knew it was time to quit. And also I had, because I had my foot in the door sort of at Hockey Night, I kind of had a feeling I had an offer waiting for me to join Hockey Night. So it made it really simple to say goodbye to the game and hello to this career, which I didn't know how long this would last. And so I was able to sort of dive into this full time and not not sort of worry about or miss my old job. So that was kind of cool, but I understand it's not that way for everybody.
Right. That's cool.
Did you not consider, like a lot of guys do, that you would go from a player into coaching?
I had no real consideration for that. No, I love broadcasting. I found it super challenging, and I thought this is something I want to do.
Well, walk us through, Kelly. Of course, we only see you between periods, maybe a little pregame, maybe a little postgame. Take us inside. What do you guys do while the game's on? Who's watching what game? How do you pull up video? Who picks what they're going to say about what? It's really cool and highly organized. But tell us about that.
Okay, so let's just say we're doing one game. Let's just say it's a 7 o'clock game Eastern time, and it's Toronto and Montreal. And there's all of us on the panel. So all of us will watch that game in its entirety and picking out clips, what we may find interesting. And we can overlap. Like if we both want to have a comment, say Jennifer and I want to have a comment on Mitch Marner, or Kevin or Elliot might want to talk about somebody else. And we just sort of work out our time. You know, it's usually a quick 4 or 5 minute segment. So you don't have a ton of time, but you can still pick out plenty of things. And then if we have multiple games on at the same time, with the help of our producer, Brian Spear, he'll tell us, hey, Kelly, you focus on the Calgary Winnipeg game, and, you know, so on and so on. And then we sort of divvy it up that way. But it's really, I'd say, intensive. I don't personally like to talk a lot during the period. I like to really sink my teeth into the game and focus. So there's not a lot of chatting going on, and I don't take as many notes as I used to. Jennifer takes the most notes now, but throughout the course of the period, we'll be asking our production people to save this, save that. And we sort of build these packs to run on the air. And that's what I'll do today. Like, I have an off day, but I'll be talking to my producer, Brian Spear, and preparing for our pregame show tomorrow. And it just goes on and on and on. And by the way, I think, and this is a good thing, the way my brain works, I think about hockey almost all day long. You know, I'm always trying to think of things that might help the broadcast, what I can do different, what I can do better, just all these different things. Because, you know, it's a big show and there's a lot of people watching, and you have to stay on top of it.
Right. I thought you risked your life after Toronto lost. And everyone on the panel was, Elliot was like, they don't need to make changes. They're great. Don't forget what they did. Jennifer, I think even Bieksa, even Ronnie said they need to do nothing. And you said, oh, yes, they do. Oh, yes, they do. They need to change some players. Wow. And I sat back and went, that a boy, Kelly. Yeah.
Everybody shouldn't have the same opinion.
Right.
Well, no, of course not. But every once in a while, when you go out on a limb like that, Jim and Russ, sometimes after I say something, whether it's those comments, which, by the way, I still stand behind, but because it's not working. Every once in a while, something comes out of your mouth and you're like, in your head, you're going, why did I say that? That is so stupid. And you know, you're going to get hammered on social media. Not that you really care, but you're like, you know, I could have just chosen the safe answer and it would have been a whole lot easier on my life. But then if you choose to do that, you won't be around long, right? You've got to take a stance every once in a while and make sure that you stay true to yourself. And one of the things I think that I have always tried to be is authentic. Whether you like me or not, I'm authentic, and take me or leave me, but that's how it goes.
I thought it was awesome that you took on the Leafs. I was like, okay, take on Hartford, take on Florida, take on Buffalo. No one's going to give a shit. And Kelly went right for the throat that the Leafs made to make changes. This Bieksa is a breath of fresh air, Kelly.
Yeah, he's great, isn't he?
Yeah.
And this goes back many years. So back when I used to work on the Western show, I was on, I think you remember the show, After Hours. It's still around now.
Again. Yeah.
But After Hours was, I thought, a breath of fresh air in unto itself, because it gave the viewers back home, I thought, a really good look into the personality of the players. And Kevin I always said this when he was with Vancouver and we had him on after hours. Geez, I'm going to say at least five times. And I thought he was the best guest we've ever had. And that's saying something because we've had some really good guests over the years, but his personality would really come out and he worked at it. Like I always thought that if he ever wanted a career in broadcasting, it was up to him. And I'm happy to say Elliot is the one that really pushed him in that direction, because I think Elliot and Kevin had a really good friendship, texting and all that. And Elliot sort of suggested to Kevin that he should give it a whirl, and look what it's done to him. I mean, he's a star already on the show, and you know, here I am, 23 years. He's going to have a 50-year career if he wants.
That's yeah, well, he's so relaxed. He, you know,
now
he,
we know yeah. where Elliot gets all his scoops.
Yeah. There you go, right?
Okay, Kelly, I'm an Oiler fan. I live in Edmonton, as you do. Yeah. You're probably a little bit of an Oiler fan at heart. You can't say that.
He lives in Calgary.
I know, but he's from Meadowlark. I grew up in his hood. My kids grew up
exactly
in his hood.
Exactly right.
This just in. You and Russ know more about hockey than I do. Okay?
But you've been around hockey forever, Jim.
I heard you say it, and I couldn't agree with you more. Although he's showing the unbelievable streaks of greatness, Mike Smith makes me fucking nervous, man. Okay. It's like, Kelly, what is he doing falling down all the time in the crease when you even told him, stand up, you're bigger. What's your whole, Mike Smith is the talk of the league probably right now. I don't know amongst, you know, that whole team, Connor and Dreisaitl, but what's your take on Mike Smith? Can he do this the rest of the playoffs?
Well, the one thing you always know about Mike Smith is don't ever dismiss what he can do, because he has overcome so much, right? Like at his age to continue to play this well, listen, go back to the very first game in the first series versus LA, and he had given up a really lousy game winning goal. And it was the talk of the town, talk of the league about how he gave the game away. Next game, he has a shutout. He's asked about the shutout post game by Scott Oak, and he really stood up for himself, and he is defiant as ever, and he just continues to shine. Now, it's not the prettiest performance we've ever seen, right? Like as you said, Jim, he's all over the place and falling down, and he's deeper in his net than most goalies you'd want to see. But man alive, there is, you know, if you really wanted to dig deep into the psychology of that position, he'd be a fascinating guy to talk to, because the highs and lows, right, that he has to deal with. And man, he just bounces back every time people doubt him.
Yeah. And the puck handling, you know, this guy has a couple of assists, I think, already. I don't, you know, he's anyway. He makes
me
nervous.
Either the best or the worst.
Yeah,
and that's in every game, it seems, right?
Yeah. On the last show, I said he's a great passer to both teams.
Yeah, there you go, right?
What's your take on the whole playoffs, Kelly? We got to get to you. This is what you're good at.
Sure.
Any Rusty, by the way, Rusty went 6-2. How'd you do the first round, Kelly?
Nice. I probably went 8-0.
Yeah, okay. You and Gretz.
Yeah.
Gretz, holy.
Oh my God. Gretz was 8-0. Right? Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
That
right?
is holy. Unbelievable.
I'd ask him about it, but he's not talking to me anymore. Anyway, what about Rusty? You picked Florida, Colorado, Flames, and the Rangers. So you're down 1-3 so far. What's your take, Kelly, on the playoffs? Who do you like? If there's going to be an upset, who might it be?
Well, I thought Florida might upset to Tampa, and I was big on Florida in the first round, and going into the playoffs, I was a little surprised that Tampa got the best of them now in the series, simply because I thought Tampa they should have been out by the Leafs, because I thought Tampa they weren't at their best, and the Leafs that was a team they could have beaten. But to give them a lot of credit, they found their game now. Colorado and St. Louis, I think that's going to be a war. I just don't see, even though Binnington's out, I think St. Louis is just too deep to go out quickly. I have no idea the Battle of Alberta. I hope it goes 6 or 7, though, because I just love the hockey. And either way, we haven't even talked about McDavid yet, but there is nobody on the planet, nobody's even close to McDavid. He is just ridiculously fun to watch. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think it was possible, but he's taken his game to a new level. I honestly didn't think that he could get to this level. It's been fascinating to watch in the last six games. And man alive, if he goes to an even higher level, it might be unheard of in the history of our game.
Yeah, he's playing great. Wow. Yeah. His physical presence now is amazing.
That's right.
I mean,
that's right.
Just, and maybe that's what it is. Part of it's got to be that he's more involved in the game and giving himself even more room instead of doing the flybys and not hitting guys. And the other, and his team's following his lead. Like, oh my God. Now, you know what it's like, Kelly, when one of your star players on your team does something they don't usually do. Everybody goes, oh God, now, well, if he's doing it, we've got to do it. So, but we
100%.
Jim and I were really, we love Calgary for the Sutter quote.
Yeah, I just wrote that down.
I have fallen in love with him. I never appreciated his until social media, like some things in social media are great because you get these little snippets of his interviews.
Sure. Yeah.
And every morning I'm just like, I'm just cracking up. I mean, it's so freaking good.
Did you see yesterday someone talk, you know, because I would fear for my life if I had to be in a scrum and ask Daryl Sutter a question.
Okay, right, okay. Yeah.
Yesterday, they're talking about the old Islanders, okay? Yeah. And he says, and they asked Daryl, you have to shake hands with your brother. I don't know who won what, but obviously they were playing against each other. Yeah. And someone asked, what did you say when you shook his hands? He said, okay, who's on the tractor on Tuesday? You or me? We're sticking the crop out.
I saw that. That was amazing, right?
Yeah.
I liked his one a couple of days ago after game one when Calgary won 9-6. And they're coming off that series versus Dallas that was really low scoring and maybe a bit boring for some people.
Right.
And then he says something like, well, I told the guys after that boring series, we've got to be prepared to score 7 or 10 every night. We're going to give up 5 or 8, but we're going to win this way now. And so, I thought that was pretty clever, and I got a good chuckle over that one.
Do you know them well, any of the Sutter brothers?
Yeah, I've been around them forever. And Daryl is my coach my last year in San Jose, and I've known Brent and Dwayne. I played with them on the island. I played with Ronnie in San Jose. I've known Ron and Rich, and I've known Brian. I've known him. I know Gary, the older brother. So yeah, I've been around the Sutters and they're really caring people.
I heard Gary was a really good hockey player. Is that true?
Well, the family story is that Gary was the best.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. Now I don't know what his path was. I don't know how
had to stay on the farm.
something like that. I think he was going to go to Red Deer, like all the brothers, to play for the Red Deer Rustlers in the AJHL, and something like that happened. I'm not exactly sure. I can't remember anymore, but there was something to it.
Yeah.
What is because everyone want to know. What is Daryl Sutter like as a coach?
Let's just say no comment.
Okay.
We're not going to go down that road. So
okay, that's good.
Yeah.
That's
I'll just say he was my coach, and I have no comment on he's a coach.
There you go. Well, he wouldn't have a comment either. So
that's right. He probably didn't like me either.
Yeah. What about the talk of the town? Certainly in Alberta. And the rest of Canada, I guess, to an extent, is this series, Edmonton, Calgary. And today everyone wakes up and they would like Milan Lucic to be suspended for life. Okay.
All right.
Okay. So you're the goalie. I say he just sort of heavy checked the goalie. He could have maybe stopped, but he didn't whack him full steam. What's your take on that, Kelly? And you're a goalie. And
I'm with you, Jim. 2 minutes. I think it's only a 2-minute penalty. I didn't think that it was 5-minute boarding. I didn't agree with it. I think I heard today that there's not going to be a hearing or anything, so he won't miss any action for game 4. But, you know, I understand the officials have a tough job, and they get it right and they get it wrong sometimes. But to me last night, I could have definitely lived with the 2-minute penalty, and that's it.
Daryl Sutter today said, he goes, really, he goes, if Lucic wanted to run him.
That's right.
goes, and I watched the video before we came on, and he was definitely trying to stop, and he pushed him.
Luch could have killed him if he wanted. Yeah.
Oh, my God. If he had ran him, because he pushed him, and he went flying. Could you imagine if he had went full speed and threw his body into him? It would have been
over. Yeah, that would have been scary.
I wonder if the game was closer, if the penalty would have been different.
I think so. I personally think the score had something to do with it. Yeah. There's 11-something left in the third period, and it's 4-0.
Exactly.
And now there's – so they give him 5, and Koskinen has to come in. And fortunately for him, I think there's only like 4 minutes of game time that Koskinen played, and I don't think he faced a shot. So that was good also. So he wasn't put in a bad situation. But I do think the score had something – and time of the game for sure.
Yeah.
What are you okay with the referee through all these series?
I am. And I was taught, and I'm not dodging the question, but I was always taught by Al Arbor, whom I think was one of the greatest coaches of all time. And not only just a great coach, but a great human being. And I'm really fortunate to have had Al for a number of years. He always taught us, who cares about the officials? Never. We had, actually, it was a team fine if you took like a misconduct penalty or did something selfishly, like complained about the official or an abusive official penalty, 2-minute misconduct for abuse of the official. We were fined. And Al always told us, who cares what they call, good or bad, just play. And so that's the same approach I have in broadcasting. Like, some calls will go the way you expect and some don't. But to me, it's not a big deal. I just try and overlook it.
Good. Kelly Rudy. Rusty felt one of the other this is what I do to guys, and Kelly said the same thing. I said, hey Kelly, I texted him, I said, do you mind coming on the show for 10 minutes?
Yes, you did.
Just a few minutes.
The park ranger in Edmonton's over there questioning Kelly's time. He's like, are you camping out or sir? Or are you gonna move on here? There's a guy in the park talking to himself.
Yeah, laughing maniacally on a bench. Yeah, call the cops.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that part, four different bylaw officers came by and asked for ID. And then the part about the talking to himself. So I love this meme. And it goes something like this. It says something like, if you see me talking to myself, just ignore us. We're having a team meeting. And that's all the different people living in my head. We seem to have these team meetings all the time.
Okay, there it is. That's a wrap. You've now gone way up the list for a future guest, Kelly. Way up the list, okay? We're going to get into the top 50, okay?
Well, I wish I wasn't sharing so many good stories. I could have fallen out of the top 200.
Take it easy, brother. Good luck the rest of the playoffs, and congratulations on a great life, man, really.
Thanks, guys.
See you later, Kelly.
Take care. Love you guys.
Yeah, take care. Love you too.
Thanks for listening to The Suspendables. If you're enjoying the show, we invite you to subscribe so you never miss a single episode. Leave a positive review and share the show with your followers. And check out our brand new website, thesuspendables.com.